Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spelled babbel.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Isn't it crazy that America is turning 250 years old? I mean, look how far we've come. Now, we've got coolers in our sofas, light-up cup holders, and power-articulating headrests. When it comes to furniture worthy of this major milestone, Bob's Discount Furniture has all the styles all of America wants at the everyday low prices we deserve, backed by tons of five-star reviews. Check out the Sedona Power Reclining Sofa, a genuine leather one-stop shop for relaxation with built-in charging, cup holders, and supportive bobopedic seats, perfect for lounging in the AC all day. You can even complete the look with the matching love seat and recliner. Throwing summer parties? The HomeWorks dining set features comfy bobopedic seating and clever storage built right into the table and bench. Or customize your space with the customer favorite modular Bob Sectional. It has over 1,000 five-star reviews, family-proof construction, and wireless charging for hundreds less than the competition. At only $250 per piece, building your dream sectional is incredibly affordable. Celebrate the 4th at Bob's. It's where America shops for furniture.
No booze. Well, little booze, I'd say, on this scorecard podcast. Shane Bake alongside Patrick McDonald and Johnson Wagner coming off a really, really fun U.S. Open at Shinnecock Hills. Wyndham Clark winning his second U.S. Open championship. That is not what we're going to lead with, fellas. We are leading with the PGA Tour and the news that came out at the Travelers Championship today, Patrick. Kind of the news about what the PGA Tour is going to look like going forward in 2028. There's a whole bunch to dive into here. So I kind of want to just lay it out. We'll start with kind of the bullet points here. Obviously, there's two series. I think we all kind of had an idea that this is the path they were going to go down. The championship series and the challenger series, Patrick, an opportunity for players to play themselves into that championship series. I saw Rick mention online PGA Tour champions and PGA Tour championship series might get a little confusing, but the idea that you are looking in 2028 basically at two tours with the opportunity for players to work their way to that championship series.
And don't forget about the Challenge Tour too, Shane, over on the European side. So a lot of cool.
That's right,
perhaps. But it just seems to me like we had a substitute teacher at the helm the last few years. Did a great job with what the circumstances were. The cool kids kind of took over the class. There wasn't really a curriculum. Then the headmaster came in and it was like, all right, this is what we're going to be doing moving forward. I just think there's a lot more structure, and it's much more simple to understand what's going to be going on the PGA Tour between the Championship Series and the Challenge Series. I'm interested to see if those names last. Rolapp said they're working titles as of now, but it just, you know, knowing what you had to do to maintain your status from year to year, there's still a boatload of questions, in my opinion, that still need to be answered before 2027 so that these guys understand what they're playing for ahead of all those changes in 2028. But I think the simplicity of it is what stuck out to me and is a big win from the PGA Tour.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a positive. The championship series, 23 to 24 events, including the players, the majors, international team events, so stuff like the Ryder Cup and the President's Cup, 120 players, $20 million plus purses for those events, 36-hole cut to top 65 in ties. And then Johnson, the Challenger Series will be 20 events, at least $4 million on those purses, 144 players, 36-hole cuts to top 65 as well. Just kind of looking here, Johnson, at the bullet points of what we're looking at when you kind kind of think about championship series and challenger series. This will not be next year, by the way, 2028. But Johnson, I mean, from a guy that spent a lot of time out on the PGA Tour, what were your thoughts when you started to see this stuff come out on paper?
Well, I mean, let's be honest. The PGA Tour has been a two-tour setup for a long time anyway. In my rookie year on the PGA Tour, we had four World Golf Championship events plus the Invitationals. I'm talking Colonial, Memorial, RBC Heritage, Bay Hill. It was already this way. I think now finally being able to put names to it makes it a little more palatable. I'm personally very excited. I think there's a lot of things they need to get figured out as far as access, if certain players want to drop down and play a challenge tour event that's in, or not challenge tour, challenger series event in their hometown. I think there's a lot of wrinkles that need to be fixed. But by the way, I'm going to push back a little bit on you, Patrick. Jay Monahan did an incredible job for years, but he was handed over the reins of a well-oiled machine that Tim Fincham ran with Tiger Woods at the helm. Anybody could have run the PGA Tour in that situation. Sure, Jay Monahan made some mistakes when Liv came around, but Jay did a really good job. I think he was an incredible commissioner. He was well-respected by all the players, caddies, family members, until maybe June 6th when he came out on CNBC with Yasser Al-Rumayyan. But Jay Monahan did a good job. But Brian Rolapp, every time I hear this man speak, it's clear, it's eloquent. He has direction. He has a plan. If he doesn't know the answer, he's not afraid to go figure that out and come back to you. I really think that the PGA Tour is in a great spot with Brian Rolapp. And selfishly, covering this game at a high level with CBS Sports now, thinking about this championship series with the 17 events plus the majors and the other stuff, this is going to be really fun. You're going to know kind of what the fields are going to be like as you go into it. Obviously, no guarantees that all the top players are going to play every event. That'd be crazy to think of it. Rory McIlroy's been outspoken about how little he's planning on playing going forward anyway, which he's implemented last year and this year. But the things that are so important, and I know I'm talking a lot here, 120-man fields, cuts, to see a meritocracy come back, because the last couple of years, rookies on the PGA Tour have been behind the eight ball for so long. If you earn your way to this championship series, you should have every right, with the exception of the majors, if you're not qualified, you should have every right to play in the same PGA Tour events that Rory does, that Scottie Scheffler does, not playing this sort of challenger series event with the same expectations as the guys that are playing all the signature events. So I think this is a real win for the tour and for the players today.
You know, Johnson, I spent a lot of time covering the Korn Ferry Tour, and I think one thing, and I know you've lived this, that murky water of the guys as they've gone from 30 PGA Tour cards to 20 cards, this year, to me, it's been highlighted more than ever. Are those guys that are kind of PGA Tour quality players that have to dip between both tours, and what I feel like, at least reading this and diving into it, it feels like that might go away a little bit. There's obviously opportunity to play your way up, and I think that's obviously great. We've seen it right now. I mean, in signature events, an opportunity for players, if they're having a good year, to play their way into the biggest events. And I think that's such a cool thing in golf. We see it in so many different sports. And I think obviously everybody welcomes that, whether you move up or down, obviously in European soccer and beyond. But I think something that has been confusing for me covering the Korn Ferry Tour is you're not quite sure if the guy's a PGA Tour player or a Korn Ferry Tour player. And Johnson, I feel like what you're seeing right now is them really trying to cement who you are in this professional golf world.
Yeah, I mean, completely agree, Shane. I'm a little bit concerned when you think about 144-man fields and 120-man fields. That's 264 members of the PGA Tour. They're going to be playing week in, week out. Is the Korn Ferry Tour still going to be around, or is this Challenger Tour and Korn Ferry Tour going to maybe eventually, maybe not in 28, but 29, 30, are they going to merge and become one really incredible feeder to this now top-tier championship series? But yeah, there are more players coming out of college right now, turning pro, than ever before. And this, I think, is at least a little bit of a glimmer, because Rolapp, to his credit, I was really worried about the pathways. And he mentioned Korn Ferry Tour. He mentioned PGA Tour Americas, PGA Tour U, Q School. Like, those pathways are massive. That's how all these stars get created. I mean, look at Johnny Kiefer, who was number one on your Korn Ferry Tour last year. He got out of college straight to the PGA Tour Americas, number one out there, number one on Korn Ferry. It's these steps that these guys take. And now playing $4 million Challenger Series events, they can continue to develop and not be thrust into this position where they top 70 make the playoffs, top 700 keep your cards, and then this cycle of guys dropping back to the Corn Ferry, never getting a real crack to make it on the PGA Tour.
Patrick, a lot in this press release, a lot with Rolapp when he was talking about this. What have we missed that you feel like is worthy of highlighting?
The Tour Championship, perhaps, and how that format's going to change to match play. I heard cycling around potentially 2 weeks there, with the first one maybe being group stage and the second week being more of the bracket style that we see in typical match play. And then, of course, them and their wish list of potential courses where that could be. I think they're shooting for the stars with where they're trying to play, whether it's Pine Valley, Seminole, Cypress. I heard Friar's Head as well. So I think them kind of understanding the venue is going to matter as much as the characters on them and the form format as well. So I think that's a great step in the right direction, because I know the playoff format, whatever it is right now, it just has not caught on for the last two decades. And to switch it like that, I think is a great step in the right direction. And so that would be kind of the main thing that I don't think we've touched yet. And the international series too. They're going to have that last chance series for the guys in, past 90th, 90 to 120 in the championship series during the fall. But I think to leverage potentially the Irish Open and some of these national opens during the fall on the DP World Tour, that's some of the best golf all year that is not on the PGA Tour. It's on the DP World Tour. And to have potentially some more PGA Tour stars willing to go over there and play in those events, that would be amazing.
Yeah, Patrick, I was reading the ESPN article when they mentioned Pine Valley, Cypress, and Seminole, and I was laughing. I'm like, did Rolapp just get somebody to print a top 100 golf course list? And he was like, oh, yeah, these, let's play these. But, I mean, there are – listen, I think people that have never been around golf tournaments, Wags, you see it week in and week out when you're on the road, how much it takes to put on a golf tournament. I mean, it's a cliche. You hear people talk about it a lot. I mean, but I've been a member at a course that put on a PGA Tour Champions, not a Champion Series event, a PGA Tour Champions event. And, I mean, you're talking a month or two or longer, depending on how big the event is, in terms of infrastructure being taken down, also being put up. I think at least the feeling I'm getting, Patrick, about the potential to go to these kind of iconic venues, you know, the cathedrals of the game, is the footprint will be minimal. And I think that's something that could be huge for places when you approach them and say, we'd love to use your course for a big-time PGA Tour event. We're not going to have 2 million grandstands up that's going to kill all the grass for 2 years, and players can't play. If you're a wingfoot, the members can't play the other course for a year.
I mean, Johnson, you could probably speak on it a little bit, being a member at Quail Hollow, but I have family members at Trump DC, and the live event this year, the entire membership was pissed about it. They didn't have their golf course for 2 months, and they're like, all for this event. So Johnson, being a PGA Tour venue for a long time, what has been that kind of push and pull with the membership?
Yeah, and it's pretty split 50-50 at Quail. So for a PGA Championship or a President's Cup, it generally takes 6 months to build out and then 3 to break down. For a normal Truist Championship, it's more like 3 to build, 4 to build, 2, 1.5 months to break down. But we play all the way up until Friday before the Truist Championship. So we've struck a really good deal with the PGA Tour. We don't really lose our golf course that much. Now, currently, as an overseeded golf course, it's not great right now. We've punched the greens. It's a little rough around the edges. But by the end of June, 1st of July, it'll be back. We really have 11 months of a great golf course, but we have had this tournament every year since 2003. So it's becoming a bit of a well-oiled machine, how we handle it. And they've done a great job building access roads that can facilitate semi-trucks, so you don't lose a ton of the, off the plane surfaces grass.
Patrick, one thing I feel like we haven't touched on, or I haven't read a lot about, is when you think about 2028, what does this do for the top names? Because we're talking a lot about the guys trying to play their way up or play their way down. Does this change anything for a Rory, a Scotty, a Ludwig, that type of player? Does their lives look a lot different?
Well, I'll say this. I was curious, and I don't think anyone asked it at the Rolapp presser, is there going to be a minimum number of events that these guys are going to have to play? Because if you're Rory and you get off to a hot start, you just open up your entire schedule to to play as you wish, or if you're one of these any other guys and you don't have to worry about that cutoff point, you just you can play as little as you want moving forward. And so I don't know if their lives are going to change. I think that middle ground, kind of the guys who have struggled to get into the BMW championship every year, it's gonna their butts are gonna be hot. There is gonna be boiling water underneath them. The pressure is ramped up big time, especially in those last few events. It's gonna be great to see. And I am curious, something we didn't mention is both of these series will have different point systems. I am curious what that point system is, and how much fluidity there is from week to week in the championship series. You know, how much is a T4 worth versus a T25, stuff of that nature.
I don't. This is a request to Roll App and his team. I don't know how you do it, but we got to make the punts make more the points make more sense. It's got to be easier. Nobody in the history of golf, Johnson Wagner, Rory, Tiger, Patrick, myself, nobody has ever known what an actual FedEx Cup point is worth. So please make this a little bit easier for everybody. So when we talk about it, yeah, exactly. It's a shrewd buck. That's exactly what it is, Patrick. But make this a little simpler, so when we are talking about FedEx Cup points or whatever that is going forward, we at least know what we're talking about, or we could put value to those points, maybe make it a dollar's worth or whatever they earn at the events. Plenty more to discuss, obviously. I mean, this coming out just today, so we're just diving into this. We, of course, got to talk about Wyndham Clark and the U.S. Open. So stick around. Scorecard just getting going.
DMV summers are no joke. The heat, the humidity, the beltway at 5 p.m. AC season is here and your car needs to keep up. Rota is the DMV's most trusted auto shop with over 1,000 five-star Google reviews. From AC checks to oil changes to detailing, we keep your car ready with no hidden fees and no pressure. Plus, free valet pickup and drop-off, so you don't have to lift a finger. Book at Rota.com and save 20% on maintenance, repairs, or detailing with code POD20.
Are you really buying a car online on AutoTrader right now?
Really? I can get super specific with dealer listings and see cars based on my budget.
Mom! You can really have it delivered.
Or pick it up.
Mommy, look!
I think your kid is walking up the slide.
Really?
AutoTrader. Buy your car online. Really?
It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all. And it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game. And head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Back here on Scorecard, Patrick McDonald just getting home before the show started from Shinnecock. Patrick, good travel day? You had a good travel day yesterday?
Well, it was two travel days, which is never a good thing. I had to drive through the Senegal, Norway traffic on the way to LaGuardia. Nice. Once I got there, no flights were leaving. A lot of people were crying. A lot of people sleeping in the airport. Not your boy, though. Got to book the DoubleTree at LaGuardia. Thank you for the warm cookies from them. And got back this morning just in time. Rushed through the door so I could talk to you two.
Well, let's talk about the U.S. Open. Let's talk about Wyndham Clark. Patrick, you were out there. You got to kind of consume a lot of what happened over the week, especially on Sunday. Wyndham Clark wins his second U.S. Open championship. A pretty incredible career in terms of what he's done at the majors, because he's really not cracked an egg outside of the two wins. Had one good showing at the Open Championship. It was the putter. It was the par saves. Patrick, it looked a lot like what we saw from Atif Goosen back in 2004 at Shinnecock with those 4, 5, 6 footers throughout the week, especially on the weekend. And I think the story outside of the victory, Patrick, coming out of it, was the way the fans handled Wyndham Clark. How was it on the grounds?
It was a generational hate watch for some of the people on the grounds, Shannon Johnson. Like, I'm not going to put any different way beside it. I saw people FaceTiming in friends to yell at Wyndham Clark. That's how big of a hate watch it was. They're outside the ropes and they were putting their phones right there by him. It was insane. It's something I've never seen before, especially for an American in the U.S. Open. I know people likened it to the Ryder Cup. And I'll say this, the Europeans seem to have this hoity-toity act of, oh, we never do anything wrong on the golf course. We're great fans. We're so knowledgeable. Like, come on. I saw Europeans spit at Sam Burns at the Ryder Cup last year. So I need them to get off their high horse. But it was It was wild. It just felt like he was playing in a mosh pit the entire round, with people in his ear. Obviously, they wanted to see a tournament. They wanted Scottie Scheffler to complete the career Grand Slam. Then they latched on to Sam Burns because he was making a heck of a run. But it felt like all that just overshadowed Clark the golfer, and he put on an absolute clinic with the short game, like you mentioned, Shane. The putt on 16 was as drippy as they come for him to make birdie on that hole, which really ended up sealing the deal for him, giving him enough breathing room down the stretch. And I thought it was such a gutsy performance, knowing he slept on the lead every single night and knowing no one wanted him to win this tournament on the ground.
Wags, I go to 16, to Patrick's point. I go to that second shot. Nothing I like more than a golfer telling a caddy I got it and then pulling the shot off, and obviously hits that tee shot left. Just really didn't have the golf swing over the weekend. I think that's the thing I took away. We now have two major championships in 2026 where I felt like the guy that won it didn't hit it great over the weekend, Rory at Augusta and Wyndham Clark here at Shinnecock. But I love the call off. Like, I've got this shot. Let me just be an athlete. And he rips it up there in the fairway and obviously gets it on the back of the green and makes that putt. I mean, this guy, and you had a great comp in the break that you heard during your radio show yesterday with Wyndham Clark. But, I mean, this guy makes you feel things, whether it be I want to go get some grape or I hope this guy doesn't win. But, like, you feel stuff with Wyndham Clark. And right now he's playing the best golf of anybody in the world.
Yeah, a guy called into the radio show yesterday and likened him to, he said, Wyndham Clark is the American Sergio Garcia. And I thought, wow, that is perfect. He's a little bit impulsive, says some crazy things. I mean, think back to the par three contest when he was with SVP on the ESPN coverage and said that watching these kids run around is like perfect birth control. Like, I don't know that was the best thing to say.
Maybe not the best place to say that.
Right, trying to give you an olive branch to you know, repair your sort of persona. But Wyndham Clark has been playing great golf, and I walked with him Saturday, Sunday at the Byron when he won, thanks to Patrick McDonald's Notre Dame prediction there that week. And I mean, the dude, his short game has always been next level. And when he puts the ball like he's putting now, he's just a force. And honestly, I know I've kind of hated on him this year about the can't win stuff and curves the ball too much. He has completely proven me wrong, and I can't say enough about him. The way he handled all the questions every single day after, like you said, leading wire to wire, getting asked every night about the locker incident at Oakmont, having the people heckling him, and the way he responded by saying, yeah, every time I heard something negative, I just tried to replace it with something positive. I think Wyndham, for a little bit, maybe got a bit away from Julie Ellion after the 2024 season. Now, obviously, she's back fully in the mix. And, I mean, she has done wonders for him to be able to replace a lot of anger and frustration with the ability to turn it around and replace it with positivity. I think this is a win that I will never forget out of him, just everything he had to overcome. And it's just shocking. I really wish the heckling and this sort of nonsense, there's no place for it, especially at Shinnecock, especially at a major championship. Yep. I mean, golf fans and need to be better, because the game of golf holds itself to a much higher standard. I mean, the code of conduct that major championships are putting into play for players, well, it needs to be put into play for spectators as well. And I know they ejected a lot of people out there, Patrick.
Yeah.
Patrick, I do want to
go ahead, Shane.
Go ahead, Patrick.
No, I was just going to say, the fans, early on, it was like, where is everyone? The first 3 days, they were fine. It was just the last day. And it just seems to me that these golf tournaments have turned more into sporting events, right? Like, it's a football game. It's a basketball game. And you get to be so close to these players, unlike those, right? Football, you're hundreds and hundreds yards away. Right there at a golf tournament, you're right next to this guy. And with social media, and I will say how the game has changed, the recreational game has played. I think all three of us, we started when we were young and we fell in love with it because we got to make some of our best friends and it taught us a lot of life lessons. You see all these people coming into the game now. They're doing it to have a good time, hang out with their buddies, get drunk, have some bets, stuff like that. And I think it's honestly trickling into the professional game. It's part of the growth of the recreational game is trickling into the fans in the professional game. And because of that, that's why we're having more and more moments of this. I know people want to blame Long Island in general, but I think generally it's kind of a trend in golf too. It got to the point on Saturday even where a pretty well-known player had to have his caddy talk to the security because – guys were yelling in his backswing because they were betting on him, like, to fail. And so it's just something's got to change. And it comes back to the essence of golf. This hasn't been golf-like at all. You cheer for the guy you want to win. You give a clap. You give an applause for the guy maybe you don't want to win when they pull something off. And this weekend, it just didn't feel like a golf tournament out there on Sunday.
You know, I want to ask, you know, I mean, I think every time, and again, Augusta is such a unique spot in so many different ways, but I feel like everybody goes to the Masters, whether you're a patron or somebody that works in the media or a player, and everybody walks away from that week kind of praising the fact that, A, everybody obeys, and I think that's because the pressure the club puts on people, understanding that if you do something wrong, you might not be back. But the whole no phone thing, I think, has been huge for the Masters. And I think every time we go, everybody kind of celebrates. It's the only place in the world where you can't be on your phone. It used to be airplanes. That's not the case anymore. Now, obviously, it's really only Augusta National and maybe some level of like a high-end church or something. But I do wonder if there's a point where the USGA or the PGA of America or the PGA Tour or something would at least think about this. I saw Eamon Lynch talked about this a little bit on Golf Channel about the idea of like, what if we went to no phones across the championship board for golf and really just, and then allowed people to go because they wanted to go? Because I mean, that's the difference in the Masters. And I think so many other golf tournaments, even a US Open, is you're going because you want people to know you went, you're going for the experience, for the story on your Instagram. And you might not be there to simply consume the golf or consume the experience. And now, to Patrick's point, that has bled into what we experience as fans when we're watching on TV, and obviously what the players are experiencing. And I mean, you know, Johnson, there was a time where there was no phones really allowed on the golf course for fans, and golf felt different back then.
It did. My first, I think, 5 years on the PGA Tour, there were no cell phones allowed, maybe until 2011, 2010. And so it was glorious out there. But PGA Tour felt like, especially Thursday, Friday, when you've got all these corporate partners and people are taking off work to be there, you had to allow them to stay connected. But I think major championships are different. I think it would be an incredible thing, because it disgusts me personally when a guy's in the gallery and there's 20 people around him with the best seat in the house, and they're watching it through their phone, videoing it for, what are you going to do, watch that later? Why don't you just open your eyes and take in the event? You know, maybe that's the get off my lawn old man talking here, but I would love to see it, because to Patrick's point, these dudes are out there trying to get a rise out of a player while another one of their friends is videoing it so they can put it on their social media channels. And it's disgusting. So I think taking phones away would service a lot of these problems.
Yeah, I just think about the USGA and kind of their push. And Mike Wan talked about this the last week about cathedrals of golf and the understanding that the most important thing for them right now is venue, right? They want the championship to feel like the most important championship, maybe away from the Masters and all of golf. And I think they've done a great job of the lineup and putting it at places, even if they're losing ticket sales or whatever, at Shinnecock. I think that next step could be, let's elevate the fan experience and let's ask a little bit more out of the fans. What better place to do that than a place like Pebble Beach next year, which in and of itself is a bucket list item, whether you're playing it or going to watch US Open. I mean, it seems probably unrealistic to think about it, but logistically there has to be some level of way to get people to dial in. And the fact that this is the main story to come out of this US Open and the Ryder Cup last year, it was the main story to come out of the Ryder Cup, feels like a bit of a bummer. We got plenty more to talk about with the US Open. We got to talk about everybody else, Scotty and Rory, a couple of the Live boys that did not play great on Thursday and Friday. And I got some best stuffs I want to throw y'all's way. So we'll do that after the break.
In sports, the tape never tells the whole story. Hiring is no different. AI can make candidates look like an MVP on paper, so knowing the person and the skills behind the resume really matters. That's where Robert Half changes the game. Our recruiters combine their expertise with award-winning AI to evaluate skills and fit quickly. Learn how we can find you specialized talent in finance, accounting, technology, and more. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com/talent today.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Not all electric vehicles are designed the same. Toyota Electric is built to work for you. Grounded in years of proven engineering, it feels intuitive from the start. The Toyota BZ for smooth, everyday driving. The BZ Woodland for all-terrain capability. The all-new CHR for an instant, responsive drive. It's not just electric, it's Toyota Electric. We make it easy. Toyota, let's go places.
Back here on Scorecard, going to dive a little deeper into the U.S. Open, talk about everybody else. Before we get to those other names, though, I did want to ask you guys, I'm going to give you over under 2.5 majors in Wyndham Clark's career, Johnson. You going to go over or under?
I've been second-guessing Wyndham all year. I'm going over 2.5. I think he's got another one in him. You look at the way he hits the ball. He drives it great. His short game's so good when he gets hot with the putter. I mean, look at this run he's on right now, Patrick. Don't give me that look. Where are you going?
I'm with you. I think I'm over two, which is crazy to say at the onset of the year that this guy could have three major championships or more in his bag.
Yeah, I don't love him at Augusta just because of the ball flight. I don't think it's a perfect ball flight around the Masters. His record, they're not great. No top 20s in his career at Augusta. But and you know what? If you guys are both going to go over,
three top 20s in general in majors.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not good. He's got two wins, a T4 at the Open last year, and that's kind of it. We were doing comps on Sunday, Moose and I were. It's like Andy North, John Daly was one I threw out there in terms of their major comps. But obviously, Wyndham, you know, had a year and a half stretch where he was playing the majors and wasn't playing good. Let's talk about the other boys, Wags. Let's talk about Scottie Scheffler. Again, another great finish. You can argue with me if you want. Never felt like he was going to win this championship, even in that final pairing. I think there was a moment on Saturday on those three-hole stretch where he flagged that three with like one of the craziest shots ever on 16, by the way, to land it there. And there was a moment there where you thought he might run. Then he, you know, bogey 17, misses that short birdie at 18. I just never felt like he really made a push on Sunday where you were thinking, okay, now it's Scottie's time.
Yeah, I mean, from the first hole on, I mean, he's got the opportunity hitting first into one to make a statement. It's not like he hit a bad shot, but he hit it the one place you can hit it. My son's in Pinehurst playing number two today in the North South Junior, and I told him before the round, don't hit it over the back of any green except number five. What's he do? He airmails the first green and makes bogey, and I'm like, what are we doing? And that's exactly what Scottie Scheffler did on number one. So never felt like it. Had he made that eagle Saturday, had he made those putts on 16, 17, 18 on Saturday, yes, you could have thought about it. But it's amazing. As poorly as he putted, seemed like everything was left. Every good look he had seemed like he was missing the putt left. It's amazing that this guy still finishes top five on one of the hardest golf courses on the planet with his B game. I mean, that's just how good he is. I'm sad that we're going to have to wait another year for the career Grand Slam, but I know he'll get it done at some point.
35th in the field on the week in terms of putting for Scottie Scheffler. Just everything's been kind of that ho-hum golf, Patrick. And I've been kind of heavy on this with Scottie Scheffler this year. Is I think he's good enough as a golfer, no matter what game he's bringing, to finish fourth and fifth and sixth. But I just don't see the game right now good enough to win these level of championships.
I think he had to make that putt on 11 and then get a two-shot swing somewhere on that back nine to have a chance, and then obviously just didn't make enough putts. I thought the one on 13 too, that kind of broke a couple ways, was a big one, potential two-shot swing there. It felt like this was the first time Scottie was open and honest about the state of his game too, talking to the media. Usually he's a little combative, right? He's like, oh no, I'm playing great golf, you got to take a long-term view, all this. Leading into the tournament, he mentioned how the margins are so thin and he's just a little bit off. And then after, he mentioned, yeah, I've been getting off to slow starts for whatever reason. I've been playing catch up. I'm not in the lead and it's really difficult to scratch and claw my way back. And maybe I have to look into that and be sharper come Thursday. So I thought that was nice to hear from the world number one, just because he hasn't always been that open about the state of his game. And it's us talking about it and us saying it's a thing, but Scheffler's saying it's not. And for him to kindly, you know, finally concede a point like that. But I'm with Johnson. The fact that this guy, in his first attempt at the career Grand Slam without his best stuff in those last three holes, I thought were huge on Saturday, put himself in the final group on Sunday, speaks to how much better he is than anyone in the world right now.
I mean, his best skill is his competitiveness. We can talk about iron play and chipping and all that stuff, but the fact that he can find a way to be this level of competitive when everything is not working in his favor, it's very impressive, the fact that he can do this. But one major left in 2026 for Scotty, or he could go that full season without a major, which I would say is disappointing for Scotty Scheffler with the way he started the year, yeah. The win right out of the gate, and you're thinking, here we go once again, and just has not been able to take home the trophies. Well, I want to talk Sam Burns for just a moment, Wags. I don't think I ever saw Sam Burns as this level of player. I know he was a hell of an amateur player, great collegiate player as well, gets out on the PGA Tour. He has turned himself into a bona fide major level golfer and feels like he's inching closer to that major win. And he was right there, it felt like, down the stretch at the U.S. Open in Shinnecock with an opportunity to get it done. And that putt on 18, I mean, that's as good a putt as you're going to hit that doesn't go in.
100% is. I mean, and look at Oakmont. If it weren't for the 16th hole or 15th hole, excuse me, at Oakmont last year when he didn't get relief, when his ball was in a puddle but his feet were above him and he didn't get the temporary water relief, he may have beaten J.J. Spahn there. So Sam Burns, when you look at his game as a whole, he doesn't really have any weaknesses. Watching him hit drivers on the driving range, he's one of my favorite people because it is just this consistent little butter fade. Obviously, he's a great putter. He's a great ball striker. But he's starting to have that mental toughness. I mean, he was right there having a chance to win at the Memorial Tournament just a few weeks ago. Sam Burns is ready to break out. It's shocking we haven't seen him win in as long as it's been. I believe it was Colonial back in 2023 was his last win. So it's a little bit shocking that it hasn't happened. But when a guy's playing in all these signature events and the majors, and it's tough to win these events. I mean, if he would go down and play some Challenger Series events, I'm sure he'd be cleaning up right now.
wait a couple of years, Johnson. You're getting ahead of yourself now. Rolaf's telling you to pump the brakes. Patrick, can we talk about Joaquin Niemann and the code of conduct penalty? Rumor is he whipped that thing some 70 yards, made a nine. They tapped on two. Wags, did yours go 70 when you threw it like Rory at Doral?
Well, no, I think the Guinness Book of World Records is like 65 and a half yards. I'm going for that. I'm going to get the Guinness people out. I don't know that Joaquin could throw a sand wedge that far. But, yeah, I heard 50 plus for sure.
I mean, Patrick, this is at least, again, we're talking about USGA and the fans. I mean, this is kind of, I think people are calling it the Sergio rule, right? Just kind of making sure everybody's acting appropriately at the biggest of stages. I love the way Niemann handled it as well after.
Well, yes and no. I think his caddy went at Gabby a little bit afterwards for her reporting, which I think elicited a code of conduct penalty just as much as the penalty stroke, because I don't know where the line is with something like that. Obviously, he throws it 50 yards. He's stomping on fire ants, trying to get that Bryson DeChambeau ruling or whatever. But, you know, guys are throwing clubs all the time. And so I'm just curious, how do you define the line of a two-stroke penalty? Obviously, that is, you know, an egregious act inside the ropes. Does it elicit a two-stroke penalty, or is it just a one-stroke penalty? I think there's just some gray area, and for a ruling to have so much interpretation is just something I have questions about. I do think he should get penalized, obviously. We talked about how the game of golf has changed, and I agree with kind of players throwing more temper tantrums than ever. It seems like that. I like that it's getting curbed a little bit, but I think how they handled it afterwards, at least initially, Joaquin handled it great, I think, with the press and talking about it, all that. But from what that report said about going after Gabby a little bit, I mean, that elicited a penalty too.
Yeah, listen, the media ain't going to like if you go after Gabby. Gabby's a winner across the board, no matter if you work alongside her or not. She does a heck of a job, not just obviously with her day job, but also on the golf course herself. Wags, I think there's maybe a common sense rule here, I would say, in the terms of how you handle the way people act on the golf course. I would almost say if I was playing with a group of guys and the guy acted away, and I went home and told my wife that the person was acting like an a-hole, maybe that's basically the line for the two-shot penalty, right? I mean, there are throwing clubs in frustration, and then there are whipping golf clubs that is maybe bigger than that moment.
Yeah, and I wonder what he tried to get relief from the fire ants, like Patrick said, over there right of the six after whipping two balls out of bounds. And I wonder what the conversation was like when the rules official didn't give him the relief. I think there's more to it there, because what he did throwing a club 50 yards seems every bit as bad as what Sergio did Sunday. I mean, Shane, you and I were watching it on featured groups at Augusta.
Crazy.
When he took the divot out of the tee box and then threw his club or smashed his driver head against the water cooler behind the tee, breaking a club.
Broke his driver.
So to me, to your point, Patrick, your gray area is, wait a second, you're saying what Sergio did at Augusta wasn't worth two shots, but throwing the club is? I like this policy. I think it's very important to get this, to get it sort of figured out. If it's a set, and by the way, it may have been Joaquin's second offense of the year. We don't know that. First offense is a warning. Second offense is a penalty. So he may have done something at another major that this was then his second offense. I'd like to dig more to the bottom of it, but I mean, can you say enough about this guy? He makes an 11 on his 15th hole on Thursday and comes back and finishes T7 in the U.S. Open. That's a pretty darn good story right there.
Best major finish of his career, and he had an 11. He was 7 over on a par 4 and finishes the best he's ever finished at a major championship. Pretty wild. That is going to lead into our best of segments. We'll take a break and come back. We've got some best of from Shinnecock in the U.S. Open. Back here on Scorecard, going to dive into some best of the week that was the U.S. Open. I'll kick things off, fellas. I got best quote of the week. I think it's easy to go with the Neiman quote about the mom and the wheels after he was asked about what happens if he didn't make the 11. But I'm going to go with Wyndham after Tirico asked him about, you know, the fans and Scotty, and he said, Scotty's going to get the slam. He's the best player in the world, but today is my day. And he kind of smiled when he said it. It was like very Wyndham confidence. You know, it's both what I think people love and maybe get a little annoyed by with Wyndham Clark at times, but it just made me appreciate Johnson, who this guy is, because he really does believe in himself as much as anybody does out there on the PGA Tour.
That is for sure. He is a very confident human being. My best quote was Harry Higgs Friday. I loved Harry Higgs getting in the mix, and he said it was for the first time in a long time he felt confident in himself. He's like, I hope I can go out there and do the same tomorrow, but you know, probably won't. I'll just go try my hardest. So I thought Harry Higgs had a nice little session in the media center Friday.
Very honest. Patrick, I knew we threw these at you late. Did you have a best quote? If not, what do you have in terms of your best of lineup?
Best quote was Miles Russell and Jackson Koivin, of course, shared Saturday and Sunday tee times. After Saturday, Koivin, 21, said of Miles Russell, 17, quote, he's a great kid, which I just found to be absolutely hilarious.
That's really good. Just a great kid. You're like, yeah, how old are you? I got best par and Wags. I didn't want to step on your feet here, so I'm going to go with Wyndham. You can pick any Wyndham really par throughout the week. I'm going to go on Sunday, the sixth hole, after he made that sloppy, gross bogey at 5, the par 5, easiest hole all week. He went on to bogey 7 as well. He hits kind of an indifferent approach there at 6, had a lengthy putt, left it 10 feet short, and then rolled that in. And again, that went on to avoid 3 straight bogeys and, to me, really put himself in a position where he might have to push. So, to me, the best par for the week of a lot of pars at a U.S. Open, especially one at Shinnecock. I'll go with a Wyndham par from Sunday.
There was a run on Saturday from the 7th through the 11th where Wyndham made some incredible pars. The one on 7 was ridiculous. He pitched it just above the hole, and it was like a 3-footer snaking putt that he fist pumped for this little 3-foot tap in down the hill on 7. But on 10 on Saturday, over the back of the green, and 10 was playing straight downwind. We saw player after player. Rory had driven it so far up the hill that it came backwards. He made bogey, hit it over the green. Wyndham hits it over the green and was the only player I saw get it up and down on Saturday from long. It's just one of the most impressive fours after a run of great par saves to still have that. And they had that slow motion angle from underneath him when he hit it up the hill, and it bumped into the steep hill. You could see the spin come off, and it just popped up on the green with just perfect speed. So that, for me, was the best par.
And Wags, that was, he was one of the only guys, because everybody was deep on 10 that day. He was one of the only guys that went low. Everybody was going high with that shot and hitting it 20, 30 feet by, and that just wasn't playing. So Wyndham obviously saw the difference. That was also the shot he tried to hit on 5 on Sunday. That didn't work out, but worked out great there. This leads me, Patrick, to the best hole of the week. I'm going to go number 10. That hole's awesome.
By far. And to go back to the best par, two holes earlier than yours, Shane, number 4, hitting it into the fans, getting up and down as well. It was awesome. Everyone was running towards him on top of him. I thought that was a hell of a par. Best hole by far was number 10. Like you mentioned, the variety it gave these guys, them having to weigh kind of, would I rather have a wedge in or lay back off the tee with more apex height to potentially stop this ball on the green? And Johnson, you mentioned Saturday, with it whipping downwind, it was no one was stopping the ball on that green. I saw Clark go low. I saw McNeely went low as well. He had a tremendous shot, just didn't pay it off for par there. But just the options it gave these guys and not having one right answer was the best hole of the week and maybe of the year, honestly.
Well, I mean, guys having 60-degree wedge and being terrified whether or not they can hit the green with the false front and the false back. There's not many times when you can stick the best players in the world with a 60-degree from the center of the fairway, and I don't know what the greens in regulation percentage was, but it wasn't very high. And so to have a shot that short but that intimidating, I'm with you guys 100%.
It might be the best par 4 in championship golf. I really think that. 10 to Shinnecock. I mean, there's a lot you could pick from. But, again, the fact that you saw so many bad but also so much good, if you pull the shot off, obviously Wyndham on Sunday, you know, hitting that shot perfectly and it paying it off with the birdie putt, there were opportunities there. Just a couple more I had. Best ejection, I think it goes to Jon Rahm. I mean, 41 on the back nine after a really solid start to this U.S. Open. Played his final 13 holes 8 over par to miss the cut. Just not good. Not good from Rahm. Nothing good from Rahm or Bryson. I had best non-competitive top 10 of the week goes to Tyrrell Hatton. It was just one of those where he's like never played consistent golf, but he would just play good enough in the round after the bad round to move up the board. So it's going to be yellow for Tyrrell, but didn't see a lot of shots from him. Never really in the conversation. And my last one I had was the Touch 'Em All Award. Peter Uihlein had a round in the 60s, 70s, and 80s for the week. Went 80-66 Wags on the weekend.
That is shocking. How about Dustin Johnson on Friday when he walks off the 10th green? He's one behind Wyndham Clark, and he plays the next 5 holes and 8 over par to just barely make the cut. That was a psycho scorecard for you there, Shane.
It was very psycho. All right, we're going to take our last break, come back, and we'll give us our picks. We do have a signature event this week, by the way, on the PGA Tour right after the U.S. Open, so we'll do that after the break. Well, fellas, it is Travelers Championship week. Last 4 winners, Xander in 22, Keegan in 23, Scotty, and then Keegan last year in that epic finish. Wags, who do you feel like is going to win this week of the Travelers?
I feel like Keegan's always got a chance. 2-time winner there. Tommy Fleetwood, lots of demons to exercise from last year's collapse. But the winner is going to be Brian Harman. Brian Harman has finished in the top 10 each of the last 5 years. In his events history, he's made 13 of 15 cuts, 3 top fives, a third, a second. The dude is a beast for this golf course. Played just good enough last week as well to have the confidence going in, but not getting burnout from being in contention on Sunday.
Shocked he didn't pick Wyndham. Patrick, who are you going with?
I know. I like JT this week playing good golf. Russell Henley, he shot 80 after I talked to him on Saturday, unfortunately. I think I put the curse on him, saw him on the range, and he doesn't break 80. But your winner this week, Johnson mentioned him. It's the year of redemption. Tommy Fleetwood's going to get it done.
God, I'm right there with you, Patrick. I got Tommy winning as well. I like Siwoo. I like JT as well. Don't like Wyndham. Don't like Scotty Wags. I just feel like the week after U.S. Open, when you're just grinding it out. Yeah, I think you could see Wyndham a little like Koepka after that last major win when he was watching the hockey and he wasn't watching the hockey. That could be Wyndham this week at the Travelers Championship. But awesome week, Patrick. Glad you made it to the show. Wags, hope you go out and enjoy a little bit of golf and some barbecue later this week at Pinehurst. Upcoming PGA Tour schedule. We'll be back next Tuesday to wrap up the Travelers.
Paramount. podcasts.
When Conor McGregor fights, you're witnessing something once in a lifetime.
Surprise, surprise, the king is back.
Saturday, July 11th on Paramount Plus. The king returns to the octagon.
Oh! Conor McGregor transcended the sport.
But the throne is for the taking.
Max Holloway,
I'm right here.
Conor McGregor versus Max Holloway.
You're in for a treat.
UFC 329, July 11th at 9 Eastern. Stream every fight free with your subscription only on Paramount Plus.